Hello, I'm Matthew. I'm the lead pastor here at Cedar Ridge. I hope you're having a wonderful Advent season, and thank you so much for joining us this morning. For our Advent theme, we're tracking with the famous Charles Dickens novel, A Christmas Carol, which I think does an amazing job of really plumbing the depths of the meaning of Christmas, and does so without doing it particularly overtly religiously. But meaningfully nonetheless. And it's a story that's captured our imagination for decades. It's been made into all kinds of movies and plays and musicals. It has this, I think, unique blend of joy and festivity and tenderness, but also darkness and shock, and at times even horror. And I think we'll see that a little bit today. You may remember also that we produced our own version, our own production of A Christmas Carol a few years ago. That was a really wonderful time. It's hard to believe that was 6 years ago now. I think when you see some of these pictures, what's most terrifying is how much older the kids in the cast are now. But the whole cast just did a tremendous job of that. That was a really wonderful memory in our history. And today we're going to look at the spirit of Christmas present. Last week we looked at the spirit of Christmas past. Ebenezer Scrooge was taken into his past, where we saw that he had become this kind of miserly person obsessed with making money. Ironically, not just trapped in his past, but trapped in the future, as becoming rich became his obsession. And as a result of that, he was unable to enjoy the present. He'd become this miserable person. Who not only was miserable himself, but sort of made life misery for everyone around him. So he's kind of trapped in his past and his future, and unable to really experience the present. So in today's message, we're going to look at the spirit of Christmas present, and we're going to begin with a clip from one of my favorite versions of the story, movie versions, where Scrooge first encounters the ghost of Christmas present. So let's watch this clip. So the clock strikes one and the ghost of Christmas present appears. And I love the way in which this version, the Muppet version of the story, handle the ghost of Christmas present, because they're true to the novel in that he says, you know, there's 1800, or been 1800 of me, referring to the years since the birth of Christ, and the fact that, there's a new one each year. In other words, each Christmas, spirit of Christmas present celebrates and experiences Christmas as if it was the first one, and the joy of all that. But also, they sort of modify it a little bit by making him really forgetful. He's so embodied in the present moment that he can't remember what he's just said or what has just been said to him. He really is the ghost of Christmas present. And he takes Scrooge out to see all kinds of celebrations of Christmas. We've had a little bit of that already with the Ghost of Christmas Past, when he took Scrooge to the celebration at Fezziwig's, his previous boss, who he had apprenticed under. But this time, the Ghost of Christmas Present takes Scrooge all over to see how different people celebrate Christmas. Some more wealthy people, like Fred, Scrooge's nephew, but also, and perhaps mainly, people who are much less well off. And in particular, we see the family of Bob Cratchit, who works for Scrooge, who are very poor, but nevertheless love Christmas and celebrate Christmas and really seem to understand the true meaning of Christmas and get great joy from that. So we see Dickens here, I think, telling us that the revelry, the festivity, the celebration of Christmas is a really good thing. Christmas is worth celebrating. It's the miracle of incarnation is worth celebrating. And that wasn't always the case. Christmas, up until the time of the Victorians, so this novel was written in 1843 in the Victorian era. Up until that time, Christmas had been a fairly austere, quite solemn celebration. But the Victorians changed all that. They were the first to send Christmas cards to one another. Many carols originate from that era. A lot of the trappings and traditions of Christmas, the food we eat, the things we say, even wishing one another Merry Christmas, it all comes from the Victorian era. Now, and the exchanging of gifts was a Victorian invention as well. And we may feel a little concerned about that in some respects, because we see where that went now. Christmas became this, it has become a very materialistic holiday. And we might be, you know, somewhat afraid of that and don't want to get sucked into that, and we see the negative side of that. But I don't think that should stop us really celebrating something worth celebrating, the incarnation, the miracle of the incarnation. Dickens really captures this, I think, that Christmas is for everyone and everyone can celebrate. We don't need to be trapped in our past, in our fears, in our failures, our regrets. We don't need to be trapped in our future by our fears and anticipation, but we can enjoy the present moment, whoever we are, and celebrate it. And of course, you know, we see that in the original nativity story, in Luke chapter 2, when the angels appear to the shepherds to tell them that Jesus has been born, it's a big celebration. Let's read what it says in Luke chapter 2. And there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger." Suddenly, a great company of the heavenly host appeared with the angel, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest heaven, and on earth peace to those on whom his favor rests." So that was quite a spectacle. That was a celebration. And we have another, perhaps more muted and personal celebration in the previous chapter of Luke, in chapter 1, where another angel, the angel Gabriel, appears to Mary and says, "You're going to give birth to Jesus." And she breaks out afterwards into what has become known as the Magnificat, this celebratory poem. So let's look at that together now from chapter 1. And Mary said, "My soul glorifies the Lord. And my spirit rejoices in God my Saviour, for he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. From now on, all generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me. Holy is his name. His mercy extends to those who fear him, from generation to generation. He has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, just as he promised our ancestors." So we have here two great celebrations. And what's interesting, I think, is that they're not just egocentric celebrations. They're not just sort of hedonistic, but actually they're celebrations that really recognize that not everybody is as well off as everybody else. That it's a recognition of the poor. It's an advocacy for the poor. We have the angels appearing to the poor shepherds. We have the angel Gabriel appearing to Mary, a poor peasant girl who then sings about the fact that the poor are going to be lifted up. So in this revelry, in this celebration, in our recognition of incarnation, we're seeing that incarnation is going to turn the world upside down. And that itself is something worth celebrating. And Dickens, of course, alludes to this, because on the various visits that he takes Scrooge on to see Christmas celebrations, and one of them is in the Cratchit family, the issue comes up for Scrooge of, will Tiny Tim, Bob Cratchit's son, who is very sick, will he still be alive next Christmas? And the Ghost of Christmas Present implies that he won't be. And so there's this sort of dark shadow cast over this revelry because of inequity, because not everybody is equally well off. And we see this this theme played out further in what happens in Scrooge's conversations with the Ghost of Christmas Present. And we're going to look at another clip now that illustrates some of that from a different version of the story in an animated movie version. And that we'll check this clip out right now. Let's look at that. So I think you'll agree, this is a much darker aspect to the story, and in fact, a much darker side to the Ghost of Christmas Present. I think what Dickens is getting at here is that, yes, let's celebrate incarnation, the miracle of incarnation. Let's enjoy it. Let's revel in it. Let's enjoy the festivities of Christmas and that celebration. But also being present in the present moment means being aware of the reality around us and the reality that not everyone is as well off as we are, that there's inequity in our culture and our society, and that we need to be aware of that and do something about it. And so I think for Dickens, it's being present in the moment means being aware of our common humanity. And it's a call to goodwill and empathy and love and kindness as a celebration of Christmas. And that was not really how the ruling classes saw it in his day. He's been very much a social critic at this point, because he quotes back very cleverly via the Ghost of Christmas Present, Scrooge's own words. At the beginning of the story, some people come to Scrooge raising money for the poor, and he says back to them, and you know, he's not going to give any money. And when they say, well, you know, what are they supposed to do then? He says, are there no workhouses? Are there no prisons? Meaning that's a way to take care of the poor. He also, at the beginning of the story, and this doesn't come out in the clip we just saw, but he talks about the surplus population and how, you know, if poor people die, or if poor people go to prison or to workhouse, it'll, you know, that it deals with the surplus population. And that's a direct reference to some of the prevailing thinking at the time that kind of stemmed from the work of people like Thomas Malthus, the British economist, who kind of warned the ruling classes that if population growth doesn't gets out of control and isn't contained, then there's going to be a whole underbelly to society. There's going to be a growth in the working classes and a growth in poverty, and that's going to threaten the existence of the ruling classes. It's going to threaten their privilege. And so there was this great fear and even hatred towards the poor on the part of many people in the ruling classes. I'm not saying that applied to absolutely everybody, but that, you know, the fact that Dickens is speaking this way, writing this way, would have cut pretty deep, I'm sure. What he's saying is, it really matters how we treat one another. It really matters in the present moment how we are towards other people. And I think what we see here beautifully done is Dickens' deep understanding about the incarnation. The incarnation is here and now, in this present moment, in all our struggles, in all our difficulties, whether we're poor, whether we're rich, whether we're old, whether we're young. And it's a collective thing. And we are also seeing, I think, that manifest in the breaking down of the barriers between rich and poor in the story. For instance, Scrooge, his heart is melted by Tiny Tim. Scrooge is rich, Tiny Tim is poor. We see Scrooge as an old person, Tiny Tim as a young person. From very different backgrounds, in a very different situation, and yet Scrooge he's slowly falling in love with Tiny Tim. He just adores him and is so afraid that he'll die because of his illness. We're also seeing, I think, the barriers broken down in that the metaphors of want and ignorance don't just apply to society at large and to the masses, to the working class, to the poor. They actually apply to everybody, because Scrooge is himself ignorant. He doesn't get it. He doesn't understand the miracle of incarnation. He doesn't understand the celebration of Christmas. And he's very much wanting. He's rich in some respects, has what he wants, but in most respects, is completely miserable. He's bankrupt emotionally, morally. And Dickens brings this out in the story, and it's beginning to dawn on Scrooge himself. So I think this is even though the novel is not profoundly or overtly religious, it reflects a deep understanding and passion for the incarnation that Dickens has, and it's basically the concept that God comes to us in the present moment. The present moment is all we have. And that's the moment in which God appears to us, in which God comes to us. That's the moment in which God is incarnate. And incredible transformation is possible. Here is Scrooge, who is a product of his past, the choices he's made, the greed he's had, the people he's dismissed, the people he's climbed over. He's a product of his past in many respects. He's obsessed with his future. He wants to be rich. He's driven with ambition. And yet it's in the present moment that something else is incarnated. He's born again, if you like, and reincarnated. That in the present moment, the past can be changed, or the trajectory of the past can be changed, and therefore the trajectory of the future is going to be different. That's the hope of humanity. God coming into our present moment and giving us this opportunity for change, this opportunity for hope. And of course, the scriptures speak about this really powerfully. In John's gospel, in the first chapter, we read, "In him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. The Word became flesh and lived among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth." So grace and truth, the light of the world, the light of the universe, comes into our moment in the present and can change everything and anything. And of course, as we were reading last week in Matthew's gospel, the angel appears to Joseph and says, tells him that Jesus is going to be born. And then the writer of Matthew makes this comment. "All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel," which means God with us. The miracle of incarnation, God with us right now in all the messiness, all the difficulty, all the uncertainty, in the mess of our past and the anxiety about our future, God is present now and he's here for us. And not only that, it's not just for any one individual. It's not just for me. It's not just for you. This is a collective thing. As Dickens is bringing out in the story, just a few verses later in that first chapter of John that we read, here's what it says. "But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood or of the will of the flesh or of the will of man, but of God." And I think there's hints there to what follows later in John's gospel, where in chapter 3, where it talks about being born again, that we can, or anybody can be born again, anybody can be born from above, any of us can be reborn, no matter what our situation is right now. And that's just this incredible message of hope, which Dickens captures by showing us the life of this person, Scrooge, who is transformed. And interestingly, not only he is transformed in that present moment, that Christmas moment, that moment of incarnation, but because his life changes and he the way he treats other people changes, other people's lives change too. It's collective. It's not just an individual thing. So as we think about the story of A Christmas Carol, and as we reflect on the nativity, the story of the birth of Jesus, let's just consider two things as we close out, because this week's theme for Advent, the traditional theme, is peace. And so we could maybe take that angle as we approach lighting the Advent candle for peace this week. We could approach peace from both the individual and the collective aspect, and just sort of reflect on that a little bit. Firstly, with the individual aspect, as we've alluded to, I think we tend to be very easily caught up in our past. We may have all kinds of regrets about our past, all kinds of shame, disappointment. Things may have happened to us that were harmful. We may have done things that were harmful, and we kind of carry that with us into the present moment, and it can overshadow the present moment, and we don't experience the present moment. We don't experience the joy of incarnation in this moment because of what's happened in the past. Likewise, we can be trapped in our futures. We can be driven with ambition like Scrooge was, and really not aware of, or very unaware of them, enjoying the moment because we're so obsessed with the future. Or we may be very anxious about the future. And I think that can cause all kinds of fears, and it's probably true for many of us right now because we're in a time of such uncertainty. So as we think about that, perhaps we can let go of our past and let go of our future. And this Christmas time, perhaps a way to celebrate is just to experience peace in what is really a dark and troubled time right now. Right, this is going to be a Christmas like no other one we've had in our lifetime, most likely. But it's still an opportunity in that darkness, and we were talking about light coming into the darkness. It's still an opportunity in the uncertainty for us to experience peace and joy and celebration in the present moment. There's an exercise in the Advent Reflections this week that can help us with that. I encourage you to take a look at that to enable us to be present in the moment and to enjoy that and to benefit from that. So collectively, of course, as we've said, it wasn't just Scrooge's life that changed. Other people's lives changed as a result of that, because of the way he treated them. And likewise for us, peace is not just an individualistic thing. The Hebrew concept of shalom, as we talk about a lot here, is all about collective peace. It's about harmony and the world being the way it should be, society being the way it should be. And we know that that's not the case. We're increasingly aware of inequity and disparity. We're increasingly aware of injustice. And so Christmas time and the celebration of the incarnation is just a wonderful time for us to rededicate ourselves to being present in the moment and aware of and called to and acting upon that call to bring justice and to live differently, to be transformed, to be incarnation, to be reborn and create rebirth around us. So let's bear those two things in mind as we light the peace candle now. The house family are going to lead us in that and then lead us into communion as well.